This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
What's the thread that threads Martin's life? It's not failed marriages, and it's not wealth. He's known wealth, and the thread all the way through is his witness to the Book of Mormon.
Coming up next on the Joseph Smith Papers, Martin Harris, and then later, the family of John Johnson.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents the Joseph Smith Papers.
KJAZ Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
There's a tendency sometimes to discount or to dismiss altogether the contributions of some of those early church members who later became disaffected. Though these individuals had their weaknesses, that tendency would be a mistake, especially when it comes to men such as Martin Harris.
Susan Easton Black.
Martin Harris, a contemporary of Joseph Smith's father, was willing to put his own farm in jeopardy to make sure that the Book of Mormon was published. He was the first person to put forward money in the land of Zion to begin the purchase of LDS properties that will end up being lands of inheritance. He is the only witness to go to the Rockies.
Martin Harris was born in 1783 in Easton, New York. Eventually, his family came to settle in the Palmyra area and there to prosper.
Martin, before Joseph Smith ever comes into his life, Martin has grown up in what appears to be a loving family. He's learned hard work, domestic work that was needed to be able to tame the forest. He's learned how to read and write. And he has shown forth a talent for leadership and ability to make money.
Larry C. Porter.
Eventually, Martin acquired some 320 acres from his father and by his own industry.
Martin is finally now ready to marry. He's 25 years old. He's an eligible bachelor. And I would imagine there are women in town who have noticed him. You know, if nothing else, from the financial base he now has. But it's interesting, the one who attracts his attention is his 16-year-old cousin, Lucy Harris.
Later on, when Joseph Smith received the record of the Book of Mormon, interestingly enough, it was Lucy Harris, Martin's wife, who was one of the first to receive a witness of its truthfulness.
She has a remarkable dream. And in this dream, a person appears to her and tells her that she has disputed with a servant of the Lord. And as he then tells her this, he says, "Behold, here are the plates. Look at them and believe." To the amazement of the Smiths, the next morning, Lucy Harris described the record very minutely. And as she did so, at this point, she now offers $28. Towards the publication of the Book of Mormon. As a result, Lucy Harris then is the very first person to contribute anything to the translation of the Book of Mormon.
Oddly, despite her initial enthusiasm for the Book of Mormon, Lucy Harris was among those who were the first to turn against Joseph Smith.
We find that Lucy Max Smith actually describes Lucy Harris as a dark spirit flying through the neighborhood, spreading rumors and trying to get people on her side, and very much against the Smiths at this point.
Lucy Harris's resistance to her husband helping Joseph Smith and to Joseph Smith was destined to have a profoundly negative impact on the Book of Mormon translation. It happened while Martin was in Harmony, Pennsylvania, acting as scribe for Joseph.
One day as they're out skipping rocks across the river, Martin Harris sees a stone that in his mind looks very similar to Joseph Searstone. He then hurries back to the house and switches the Searstone from one side where Joseph had placed it, and Martin goes to the other side, and Martin's now ready to continue the scribing process. As Joseph comes in, Joseph looks at the stone and he goes, "I can't see anything." And he goes, "What's the matter? What have you done, Martin?" And Martin's response was, in essence, that he was just testing Joseph.
It wasn't long before Joseph and Martin had produced 116 pages of manuscript text.
Those 116 pages were much sought after by Lucy. She was prodding him to show that he was engaged in a worthwhile project. And when he went home, on a quick visit now and then, he discovered her anxieties. I went back to Joseph and said, I really need to show Lucy that something is happening here.
Martin is, in essence, trying to save his marriage. And so he asked Joseph, can he take the manuscript pages home? And the answer is no. Second time, no. We get Martin actually traveling back to Palmyra, coming back. And it's his essence as if he's saying, I don't think the Lord knows Lucy like I know Lucy. In other words, come on, Joseph, ask again. And then you get a very qualified yes.
Martin bound himself by covenant to show that manuscript only to five family members.
But he decided that he would show them to any discreet person who came by. And there were numbers of people in that category. And he went on a visit with Lucy to friends or relatives and begged to come home early, and was asked by another discreet person to show them, and went to the dresser, and it was locked, and so he forced the lock and showed the 116 pages. When Lucy came back, she was madder than hops, and as a result, the papers suddenly disappear, and there are a variety of accounts of her either hiding them and retaining them or committing them to the flames, whatever.
Martin Harris repented, and later he was given the opportunity to be one of the eyewitnesses of the Book of Mormon plates.
We're told by Joseph that Martin had withdrawn by his own volition, saying, as they prayed around before the angel came, nothing was happening, and he said, "It's because of me." And he withdrew, and so this was for Joseph and Oliver and David. And then Joseph sought out Martin, and they prayed, and they had the same experience with the angel and the table. And Martin said, tis enough, mine eyes, I believe.
Though most people know that Martin Harris acted as surety for the printing of the Book of Mormon, guaranteeing that it would be paid for, it is not as well known what else it cost him.
Lucy and Martin separated, probably very close to March of 1830. As the Book of Mormon was off the press on the 26th, that seems to be the parting of the ways. They live separate existences. Although Martin, interestingly enough, was reported to have been with her when she died. Lucy Harris died in 1836. Martin, that same year, married on the 1st of November, 1836, Martin Harris married Caroline Young. And Caroline Young was the daughter of John Young, Jr., the brother of Brigham Young.
She's 30 years younger than Martin. And the question maybe is, why would Caroline be interested in him? Yeah. I mean, when she's going to marry him, Martin by this point is in the High Council. Martin has money. Martin is a witness, you know, as respect. He has gone on Zion's camp. And for Caroline, She actually, from her writings and others, it indicates that she didn't really think she would marry. And the reason was is that she had a face that was marred. And perhaps a sense of, you know, self-esteem issues with the marred face. But Martin came courting, and suddenly Caroline was interested.
Now, being a man of some wealth and means, Martin Harris was asked to invest in the Kirtland Safety Society. But contrary to counsel, he chose not to.
So instead, he spends $5,000+ and he puts it into land in Kirtland. As he does this, in other words, it just flies in the face. I'm not going to put the money in this anti-banking company, but instead I'm going to put it in something solid. I'm going to put it in land. Well, when the bank failed, along with banks throughout the nation were closing, and you'd say the Kirtland Safety Society closed its doors, and the word on the street, Joseph Smith, fallen prophet. At this point, Martin now feels himself smarter than Joseph, Sidney, you know, all of the others, that he knew the finance. And when he saw that his financial knowledge was greater than those leading the church, will be when Martin goes out. And for Martin Harris, his loss of membership, that was a huge loss. And he is the first then of the three witnesses to go out of the church.
When the Latter-day Saints went west in 47, Martin and Caroline remained behind in Kirtland.
Caroline was with him in the community and attempting to make the best she could of their situation, but undoubtedly her heart lay west. And in that process, she finally said, I'm going to go west.
Martin actually takes her out to Council Bluffs area. And they live for some time in Rocky Ford. Caroline has her last child out there. But pretty soon Caroline is ready to continue on a wagon train to go west, going with her sister and her family. And at this point, Martin makes a crucial decision, and it is to return back to Kirtland.
From time to time, Latter-day Saint missionaries traveling to the east stopped in to see Martin Harris, the witness of the Book of Mormon in Kirtland. One of those was Edward Stevenson. To him, Martin expressed some desire to visit Salt Lake City. Well, Stevenson immediately then took that word to Brigham Young out in Utah.
Brigham Young's response, I think, was incredible. He becomes very emotional. He expresses his joy. And then he says, I think there is still time.
Martin was very interested in the possibility of going to Utah, but with a round-trip ticket and not to stay. And it had to be on that condition if it happened.
Family tradition says he goes to see Brigham Young. And they literally weep together in arms of affection. You see that while he is there in Salt Lake City, he speaks in the tabernacle. You get wonderful statements where Martin looks over the city of Salt Lake City, and his comment was, who would have guessed the Book of Mormon could have done all this?
And while some remain suspicious of Martin Harris's commitment to the church, he chose to stay. He was rebaptized, and he spent the last 10 months of his life living in Clarkston, Utah.
And while there, as people come to interview him, to ask about the Book of Mormon, he will share his testimony, which is a constant. But he will always conclude with, you have to promise me you will tell others that you heard my testimony.
And then on the 10th of July of 1875, he gave his last testimony. And I'll share just a verse of that with you, as recorded by Elder William Harrison Homer, Jr. The next day, July 10th, 1875, marked the end. I stood by the bedside, holding the patient's right hand. Martin Harris had been unconscious for a number of days. When we first entered the room, The old gentleman seemed to be sleeping. He soon woke up and asked for a drink of water. I put my arms under the old gentleman and raised him. He drank freely and then said, "Yes, I did see the plates on which the Book of Mormon was written. I did see the angel. I did hear the voice of God. And I do know that Joseph Smith is a prophet of God, holding the keys of the holy priesthood." This was the end. Martin Harris, divinely chosen witness of the work of the Lord, relaxed, gave up my hand. He lay back on his pillow. And just as the sun went down behind the Clarkson Mountains, the spirit of Martin Harris passed on.
Now, there were others who made significant contributions to the church who later struggled with their faith. Now, this home, some of you will recognize it. It used to be the home of John and Elsa Johnson. To the Latter-day Saints, this is a most significant place and an even more significant family.
Mark L. Staker.
John and Elsa Johnson and their children play a significant role in the restoration of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on the earth. And they play a significant role in the early history of the church in Ohio. One of the reasons, of course, is because Joseph Smith lives at their home for a year, where he brings forth much of the translation of the Bible that he works on. And he also receives a number of revelations while at their home. But in addition, their children, Lyman and Luke Johnson, are called to be apostles of the church. Their son-in-law, Orson Hyde, is called to be an apostle. John and Elsa are both live in New England, primarily in New Hampshire, where they settle. They play a significant role in the area, at least their family does.
John and Elsa Johnson were farmers, and those same conditions that caused the Smiths to have to relocate in New York, well, they sent the Johnsons to Ohio.
They settle in Hiram, which is about 31 miles south of Kirtland, Ohio. They build a home on Poplar Ridge, and they have a couple of log cabins there where they live while they're doing that. And they establish a very successful dairy operation. And they have 15 dairy cows, which today wouldn't seem like much, but in their day, that was quite a large operation. And in fact, the dairy farm that they have makes them very well off. They have the wealthiest, they are the wealthiest family in the area. They have the nicest home in the entire county.
Then in February of 1831, one of the Johnson sons, Lyman, came in contact with the Book of Mormon and joined the church. He then took that news back to his family in Hiram.
Elsa Johnson, 2 years before, had some kind of a medical problem with her arm. And apparently it was an attack of rheumatoid arthritis that hampered her ability to work in the cheese operation that the family was running. And so it hampered the whole family's ability to support themselves. Ezra Booth and John Johnson, and presumably Elsa as well, came to the determination that they would go and ask Joseph Smith if he could heal her. They join with Joseph at the Whitney home where he's staying, and they discuss Elsa's arm. Now, according to George A. Smith, Joseph Smith then lays his hands on her head, and apparently blesses her that her arm will be healed. And according to numerous accounts, this happens instantly. Everybody recognized that this was a miracle. It has a profound impact on John and Elsa Johnson and Ezra and Dorcas Booth. They're baptized after this experience.
Also baptized at that time were most of the children of John and Elsa Johnson. And it was at that point that the Johnsons invited Joseph and Emma Smith to come and live with them in their home in Hiram.
Joseph arrives the evening of the 12th of September, and sets up house in the Johnson home. John and Elsa give up their best bedroom for Joseph to use. And it's not clear exactly how this was used initially, but within a couple of weeks, this becomes what is known as Joseph's translation room. Now, Joseph and Emma set up house in another part of the home where they live.
And it was in this room on February the 16th, 1832, that Joseph Smith and Sidney Rigdon received the vision. That revelation known today as Section 76 of the Doctrine and Covenants. And unfortunately, that revelation was not well received by many in the area.
And so both Joseph Smith and Sidney Rigdon became targets. They tried to blow Sidney Rigdon up by putting powder in his cabin and igniting it. And they threatened Joseph Smith. This all came to a head the night of March 24th when a mob attacked both Joseph Smith and Sidney Rigdon and tried to kill them. John Johnson doesn't take this lying down. He brings a lawsuit for at least some of the individuals, and one of them, Aaron Williams, is convicted of trespassing in order to pay a nominal fine that he appeals, and he loses his appeal. But John continues to try to defend Joseph in his work, and Elsa Johnson continues to support him in his efforts as well by maintaining the household.
Later, John and Elsa sold their farm and helped fund the Zion's Camp March. Also, as part of that march, their sons, Luke and Lyman, were part of the expedition.
But after the experience with Zion's Camp, Lyman is called as the first person in the restored Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Lyman is called to be an apostle of Jesus Christ. Today, that would have made him the senior apostle, Jesus Christ. But because at that time they were organized by age, Lyman Johnson's in his early 20s when he's ordained as the first apostle of Jesus Christ in the restored church. Luke Johnson's ordained that same day as an apostle. Orson Hyde is called to be an apostle, and he's ordained that same day. So three of John's children, two of his sons and his son-in-law, are all ordained on that day as apostles.
And then came the Kirtland Safety Society. The Johnson family invested heavily, owning 13% of all total stock. And then, now there began to be problems.
John Johnson, not only sells his stock and demands his money back, but he sells the property that he was supposed to be selling for the church. He sells to other individuals who are opposed to the church, including his own family, and may not get money for that. Because John Johnson does that, he influences the Safety Society negatively, and his sons become involved also in the collapse of the Kirtland Safety Society. So, as a result, John Johnson, Lyman Johnson, and Luke Johnson all leave the church in the wake of the collapse of the Kirtland Safety Society. The Johnson family all stays in Kirtland initially when Latter-day Saints leave. Lyman Johnson eventually goes to Nauvoo. And while he's in Nauvoo, he talks to members of the 12, and he says, "I wish I could believe like I did earlier. I'd give my right arm if I could believe like I did earlier, but I can't." He eventually establishes a hotel in Wisconsin, and one day he's heading to a Christmas party. His sleigh falls through the ice with a bunch of revelers who are all heading to the party with him. They're able to get out. He gets caught under the ice where he's drowned. John Johnson Sr. and Elsa Johnson stay in Kirtland for the rest of John's life. John Sr. Can't ever believe in Joseph Smith as a prophet again. He ends up dying in Kirtland, and he's buried by the Kirtland Temple. Elsa Johnson and her son John Jr. Both eventually, after Elsa's husband dies, they leave Kirtland, go to Council Bluffs, Iowa, where Elsa dies, and eventually John Jr. dies there as well. Luke goes to Nauvoo, where he asks to be rebaptized, but he's never reinstated as an apostle. He goes to Utah, where he becomes a bishop out in Clover, Utah, out in Tooele County, where he remains active for the rest of his life. And many of his descendants are still in the church, as are Miranda Johnson Hyde's descendants.
Next week on the Joseph Smith Papers, The Snows, Eliza and Lorenzo. I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.